Okay, so it's Monday. It's July 17th, and we are studying your operation of the God-given ability. And we heard in manifestations this evening that God wants us to be speaking his word concerning his son, and he wants us doing miracles. He's called us to do that, and he will have miracles for us to do. Now, we don't have to figure them out. We just walk with God and we listen to him. And as he tells us what to do, we need to be ready to do what he says, when he says it, where he says it, in the way that he says it, just like Moses did and Joshua that we looked at and Elijah, Isaiah. And we'll be looking at Elisha this evening. We saw a little bit about Elisha last week, but he did a whole lot of really cool stuff in his walk with God. Things that God told him to do, things that God worked in him to do. We saw last week how he was Elijah's assistant. Remember, after Elijah was at the point of wanting to die, just wanting to quit, and God had some words with him, and God gave him some instructions, and one of those instructions was to anoint Elisha to be prophet in his room. So he did that. He went to where Elisha was, put his mantle upon him. Elisha had a little party, you know, farewell party with his family. And then from that point on, he followed Elijah wherever he went. And he saw Elijah go up in the whirlwind after he asked that he could get a double portion of the spirit that Elijah had. And Elijah checked in with God and he said, well, if you see me when I depart from you, then it shall be so. And if not, well, forget about it. But Elisha did see him as he ascended up with the chariot of fire and the horses of fire. And the mantle of Elijah fell on the ground, and he picked it up and he put it on, and he smote the waters of the Jordan River, and he walked across the river on dry land, just like he and Elijah had done earlier. And just like Joshua and the children of Israel had done many years before that. So this evening, we're going to look at more of the things that Elisha did. I think we have enough with Elisha to keep us busy for this hour. And we'll be in 2 Kings chapter 2. In the beginning of the chapter, you have the incident with Elijah in the whirlwind. But towards the end of the chapter, you see something interesting that Elisha did. In verse 19, we're going to pick it up. And it says, and the men of the city, where he happened to be, I believe it was Jericho, and the men of the city said unto Elisha, behold, I pray thee, the situation of the city is pleasant, it's a good location, as my Lord seeth, but the water is naught, and the ground barren. So the water was naught, or bad, is the Hebrew word for bad, and the ground is barren, so they can't drink the water, it's not good for them. And the water that's watering the land makes it so that the crops don't grow. So there's something wrong with the water supply there. And he said, Elisha said, bring me a new cruse. It's a little container for water. And put salt therein. And they brought it to him. And he went forth unto the spring of the waters and cast the salt in there and said, thus saith the Lord, I have healed these waters. There shall not be from thence any more death or barren. So the waters were healed unto this day. So we don't know how long it was from the incident to the time it was written down. But at the time it was written down, the waters were still healed. They could drink it and the crops would grow. So the waters were healed unto this day according to the saying of Elisha, which he spake. Now he spake it, but the words that he spake or spoke were words from God, because how did he say it in verse 21? He said, thus saith the Lord. And you don't say, thus saith the Lord, unless the Lord hath said it. Okay? We read about some prophets that were saying, thus saith the Lord, a number of weeks ago, when we were looking at the Revelation, and how they got in trouble with God, because God did not talk to them. But they're saying, thus saith the Lord, as if God did. Now, Elisha is the real deal. So when he said, thus saith the Lord, it's because the Lord hath said thus, and he spoke what God told him. You don't always see in the records of Elisha God speaking to him. But we know from this and from others where it is evident that God was speaking to him, and he was speaking and acting according to the words of God that he was getting. So let's go to chapter 4 of 2 Kings, and we'll start in verse 1. This has to do with a widow, a young widow, whose husband had recently died, and her husband was one of the sons of the prophets. So the sons of the prophets, they were students of Elisha, and probably had been students of Elijah before that, but now they're students of Elisha, and he died. So let's read about this in verse 1. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha, saying, Thy servant, my husband, is dead, and thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord. And the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen, to be slaves, like indentured servants, to pay off the debts that the family had. So she's in a bad situation. She lost her husband that she loved. She is in danger of losing her two sons, which would be her only support. And what else would she have? So she goes to the man of God, which was the right thing to do. And Elisha said unto her, What shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in the house? And she said, Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house, save a pot of oil. So that's the only thing of value that she had, was a pot, would have been like a clay pot with oil in it, most likely olive oil, because that's the kind of oil that they used in the area. Verse 3, Then he said, Go borrow thee vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels, borrow not a few, meaning borrow as many as ye can. And when thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and thou shalt pour out into all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. Now, it doesn't say here that God told him to tell her that, but we know from the previous record that we read that when he spoke in this capacity here as the man of God, the Lord had spoken to him. God had told him to do these things. So when he asks, what do you have in the house? That's something she's talking to him. He's checking in with God, saying, okay, God, what do we do? Ask her what she has. Okay, what do you have in the house? Pot of oil. You heard that? Now what? Tell her to borrow as many pots and vessels that she can and pour that oil into the other ones. Okay, that's what he told her. He wouldn't be making this up. There's no manual that says if a woman has a pot of oil to tell her to do this. It's similar in a way to what Elijah had done, the previous one, Elijah, when he stayed with the widow woman and her son and told her that the barrel of meal or flour would not waste and the cruse of oil would not go empty. They poured out some every day to make food. But this is a little bit different, taking that pot of oil and pouring it out into all these other vessels and filling them all. But that's what God told him to do, and that's why he told this widow woman to do that. Verse 5, So she went from him and shut the door upon her and her sons, which is part of the instructions. So she borrowed the vessels, shut the door, and her sons brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. And it came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, Bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. So up until this point, it kept flowing. There was always more out of this pot. And now that there were no more other vessels, it says the oil stayed. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, Go sell the oil and pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. So there she was able to pay the debt, so she didn't have any debts anymore. She had her two sons who would support her and be with her, and it was a miracle, just a miracle that this was done. And it was done by the woman going to the man of God, the man of God going to God, finding out what to do and telling her, and then she obeyed exactly what he said, and her need was supplied in that way. Now in verse 8, it says, And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman. I don't know if she was very large, or it could be that she was very important in the community. It could be someone who was very wealthy, that she was called a great woman. and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. He had this invitation, and she would always see him coming down the road and say, come in, have something to eat. And if he said no, she would say, yes, you come on over. And if he said, no, I'm kind of busy, I have to get going, she said, no, I insist. That's constraining, where she would ask him at least 3 times, and then he would give in. And she said unto her husband, behold, now I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Now, she wasn't doing it originally because she knew that he was a man of God. She just had that hospitality where people would entertain strangers. They would see someone coming down the road and they would invite him to their house to eat. That was Eastern hospitality. She would do that for anybody. But she came to know him that he was a man of God. And she said to her husband in verse 10, let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall. Put an addition on the house, make a room for this man, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. And it shall be when he cometh to us that he shall turn in thither. So he'll not just come to eat, but spend the night and have breakfast with us the next day. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. You're taking such good care of us. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king? Because he could do that. The prophet had an open invitation to speak to the king. Or to the captain of the host, you know, the general of the army. And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. Said, no, I don't need any of that. And he said, what then is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old. So that's something that is lacking in her life. She doesn't have any children. Her husband is old. So this is when Elijah would have checked in with God to see, what do we do for her? And he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And this is not something you just say off the top of your head. He told her that she was going to have not just a child, but a son specifically. And about this season, according to the time of life, 9 months is the time of life, right? Thou shalt embrace a son in very definite terms. Told her what was going to happen, what kind of child she was going to have, and when. And she said, nay, my Lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid. It's like she didn't at this point believe that that was going to happen, but she must have changed her mind because the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. It happened just as he said, because God caused it to happen. And when the child was grown, so this would be a number of years later, it fell on a day that he went out to his father to the reapers. So his father was already old before, now he's even older. But his father's out and the reapers there, so they have employees working for them on the family farm. And he said unto his father, oh, my head, my head. And he said to a lad, carry him to his mother. So this son, he was grown, but still a child, it seems, that he asked a young man to carry the boy to his mother. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. What a horrible thing for a mother to have her little boy to die while she's holding him. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, and shut the door upon him, and went out. And she called unto her husband, and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men, and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God, and come again. And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath. And she said, it shall be well. It seems she didn't even tell her husband that the child was dead at this point. She just said, get me transportation to go to the man of God as soon as possible. And it shall be well. The word well is shalom. It will be well. Then she saddled an ass and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee." Just go as fast as you can, unless I tell you to slow down. So she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass, when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Behold, yonder is that Shunammite. Run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child?" And she answered, "It is well." That's what she told Gehazi. And when she came to the man of God, to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away, thinking it would be improper for a woman to touch him like that. But the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid from me, and hath not told me." God hasn't told me what's going on here, but I know that it's something bad. Then she said, "Did I desire a son of thee? Did I ask for a son of thee, my Lord? Did I not say, Do not deceive me?" Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up thy loins, and take my staff in thine hand, and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not." Don't say hello to anybody. Don't stop to talk. "And if any salute thee, answer him not again, and lay my staff upon the face of the child." So he gave Gehazi specific instructions. And the mother of the child said, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." But he arose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them, and laid the staff upon the face of the child. But there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him, and told him, saying, "The child is not awaked. I did what you told me, but nothing happened." And when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead, and laid upon his bed. He went in therefore, and shut the door upon them twain, and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child, and put his mouth upon his mouth, and his eyes upon the child's eyes, and his hands upon his hands. And he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. Then he turned and walked in the house to and fro, and went up and stretched himself upon him, did it again, and the child sneezed 7 times. Indicating he was alive. And the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, "Call this Shunammite." He said, "Oh, Shunammite." So he called her. And when she was come in unto him, he said, "Take up thy son." Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. Wow. So she had her son was physically dead, not breathing, and for some time, because she had to go to where Elisha was and back again. I didn't bother looking at the map to see where Shunem was, and because it says Elijah was in Carmel, right? And she was in Shunem. So that looks like about 25 miles. There was a lot of time that the child was dead, but the woman had her son back to life again. What a wonderful thing. So Elisha seemed to have a couple of setbacks there. He told Gehazi what to do, put his staff upon the child's face, but there was no result. And then he got there and he stretched himself upon the child and the body waxed warm. Then he walked to and fro in the room for a little bit. And that would indicate he's praying, you know, asking God what to do, what to do. And God told him to stretch himself on the child again, because he did that. And then the child sneezed and opened his eyes. So he was persistent. He didn't give up when he didn't see the result right away. He was persistent and he kept at it. And he did see the result. And it was just a wonderful miracle. And again, Elijah also had raised a boy from the dead, remember? But you know, Elisha was not with Elijah at the time that Elijah raised that boy from the dead. So it's not like he looked at Elijah and saw what to do. But he probably heard from Elijah that this had happened and knew that Elijah had done that. But this is something that, of course, you need revelation from God to know what to do in a situation like that. But he kept at it, and God raised that boy from the dead. Now, let's look at a pottage of wild gourds. Not quite as dramatic, but still an important thing that happened. Verse 38, and Elisha came again to Gilgal. So, looking on the map, Gilgal is here. looks like about maybe 60 miles from Shunem. So he came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land, a famine. And the sons of the prophets, that group of students or disciples you might call them, were sitting before him. And he said unto his servant, set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. So again, there's a dearth in the land, but he said, get the big pot, put water into boil, and we're going to make some kind of stew or something for everybody to eat. And one went out into the field to gather herbs, and found a wild vine, and gathered thereof wild gourds, his lap full, and he came and shred them into the pot of pottage. For they knew them not. He didn't know what kind of gourd that they were, but since food was scarce, they took what he found, and he cut it up and put it in the pot. So they poured out for the men to eat, and it came to pass as they were eating of the pottage that they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat thereof. So whatever kind of gourds that they put in there must have been something that's not good to eat. So there's death in the pot. Make you sick or die from it. But he said, then bring meal, which be like flour, and cast it into the pot. And he said, pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot. Usually flour doesn't have that effect. But in this case, it must have been what God told him to do, because that's what he said to do. And we saw the result, that there was no harm in the pot at this point. They could eat it. Let's move on to verse 42. There's another interesting incident. It says, and there came a man from Baal Shalisha and brought the man of God bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley and full ears of corn in the husk thereof. And he said, give unto the people that they may eat. So this man had a farm, and he got the first fruits of his harvest, that first bit on that first day of the ripe fruits, meaning out of his whole crop, not all of it was ripe yet, but some of it was. So he gathered that, and he gave it to the man of God as his way of giving it to God. So he gave it to the man of God, and Elisha said, give unto the people that they may eat. And his servitor said, what, should I set this before 100 men? He had 20 loaves of barley and some full ears of corn in the husk. But he said, shall I set this before 100 men? A barley loaf would be kind of like a pita bread. So that's not enough to feed 100 men. And he said, give the people that they may eat. For thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and leave thereof. See, they'll all eat as much as they want, and they will be leftovers. Okay? So he set it before them, and they did eat and left thereof according to the word of the Lord. So this is another case where you see that Elisha is speaking words that God told him to speak. In the other cases, he did things that God told him to do. We don't see in the record God telling him, but we know that he did, because he walked with God, like in this verse and the other ones where he said, thus saith the Lord. So that sets a pattern that would apply to all of them. He's a man of God, and he's asking God what to do, and God's telling him what to do. And in this case, you see it. He said, thus saith the Lord. Very similar to the incidents with Jesus Christ, where he fed thousands with just a few loaves and fishes. So it doesn't matter whether it's many or few, it's still a miracle. 100 men being filled with 20 loaves and some corn in the husk and having leftovers, that was a miracle. Feeding 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fishes in the days of Jesus Christ was also a miracle. How God does these things, it doesn't say how he pulls it off. But we know that the men who did this, they just follow God's instructions. That's all that they do. And there's a great simplicity to that. But there's also a trust. There's a believing in God that they just would know that God would tell them what to do. And when God spoke to them, they didn't say, was that God? They knew it was God. God would give them the word of knowledge, the word of wisdom. Discerning of spirits would tell them, yeah, this is God talking to them. And they would have the quietness on the inside to hear when God spoke to them. the meekness to do whatever it was that God said, to believe whatever it was that God told them, and to carry it out, not worrying about whether they would be embarrassed if it didn't come to pass. They didn't have that pride of thinking, well, what if I say this and it doesn't happen, then I'll look bad. And this is something that can stop a person from walking with God. Some of the things that can get in the way would be not being confident that God will actually talk to you. Or if God talks to you, doubting that it was God. Or not carrying it out the way God says to do it. Or just being afraid that it's not going to happen the way God said. So there's things that can stop a person from walking with God. But every one of those things is overcomable. Okay? If you want to walk with God, you can develop that humility. You can develop that confidence in Him. And God can help you with this. We've read some records where God helped somebody to have that confidence. Think of Moses, where he said, I can't talk to Pharaoh. I can't even talk to the people of Israel. They won't listen to me. I have no credibility with them. And I can't even speak well. Find somebody else that would be better qualified to do it. And God said, no, you're the man. He said, what are you holding in your hand? Oh, a stick. Throw it on the ground. And it turns into a snake. That was God's idea to help Moses to have the confidence that whatever God would tell him to do would happen. If God told him to throw the stick on the ground, God would make sure it turned into a snake and turned back into a stick when he grabbed it by the tail. And he showed him a few other things, if you remember. Then when he went to Pharaoh, he not only did those things, but the other things that God told him to do and the things that God told him would happen as a result, Moses knew this would come to pass because God trained him. He taught him. God will teach you if you want to be taught. If you don't want to be taught, then it's hard for him to do that. But I believe every one of you does want to be taught of God, but otherwise you wouldn't even be here. But God himself, your Father, will teach you, and he'll help you with these things. We know he wants us to do these things. And it's not a matter of pumping yourself up to do a big achievement. You kind of lower yourself to say, okay, I'm going to do whatever God tells me to do. And when I go to God for revelation, I'm not going to make up my mind what God's going to tell me. I'm going to ask him and see what he does tell me, okay? And if I'm looking for a certain result, I can make a request to God, but I'm not going to tell him how to pull it off. That's his job. So we need to always get straight what's our job, what's his job. Mm-hmm. It's our job to believe his word. It's our job to make requests, to inquire of him. It's his job to give us the information, the instructions. Then it's our job to carry out those instructions, believing the information that he gave us. It's his job to make sure the results come to pass according to his word. You see, we're workers together with God. None of this would be possible independently of God. No matter how hard you're believing that something will happen because you decide it's going to happen will not make it happen, okay? But if God tells you something, then it's on him to make it happen. It's on us just to believe whatever it is that he tells us and then to follow the instructions exactly as he gives them to us, okay? So let's go to chapter 5. This is the one with Naaman, the captain of the host of the king of Syria, the great general of the Syrian army. So chapter 5, verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master, and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. So you'd think that the Lord's only helping Israel, or Judah, but this says the Lord had given deliverance to Syria by way of this man Naaman. So God is at work in this man's life. And he was also a mighty man in valor, means a very brave warrior, but he was a leper. He had leprosy, he had this skin disease. And that's a problem. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, a young girl, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So she was old enough to do housework and stuff like that and wait on Naaman's wife as her mistress. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God, my lord," and when it says my lord here with a small L, it's talking about Naaman, the man of the house, okay? "Would God, my lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." So was it God working in that little girl to say that? Could be. God can work with kids. And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus saith the maid of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go to go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel." And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." Now the little girl had said that there's a prophet in Samaria, but the king of Syria sends Naaman to the king of Israel, who is not a prophet, and I don't think was even a good guy. And it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." So the king said, "Oh, he just did this to pick a fight, to ask me to do something that I can't do. And then when I can't do it, he's going to have his general and his army attack me, and it's going to be bad." Because kings, one thing that they do is strategize, like playing chess. Okay, he did this. If I do this, he's going to do this, and then I'll do this. That's how they think. So he's thinking, there's something wrong here. He's telling me to do something I don't have the ability to do, and he's doing this to pick a fight with me. And it was so when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." It doesn't say how Elisha found out, whether God told him or just the news spread that the king just tore his garments because of this and Elisha heard of it. But in either case, he sent to the king saying, "You tell Naaman to come to me." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times and thy flesh shall come again to thee and thou shalt be clean." Very clear instructions. This is something that God would have told him to do, and that God would have told him to send a messenger to tell him not to go out there yourself. Remember, God will tell him what to do, when to do it, where to do it, and in what manner to do it when he gets that word of wisdom. So the word of wisdom was to send a messenger and tell the messenger to tell Naaman, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." But Naaman was wroth, he was angry, and went away, and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me, and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and strike his hand over the place, and recover the leper." So Naaman had imagine in his mind how it was going to happen. And he brought all the silver and the gold and the things, and he has it all planned out. And it didn't go according to Naaman's plan. And remember, Naaman is a great man. He's a military hero. He's used to people making a big deal of him and treating him with respect. And he goes to the prophet, and the prophet doesn't even talk to him, but just sends a messenger and tells him to wash in Jordan. And Jordan's a muddy river. It was like beneath him to do all these things, but it's just what he needed. He didn't realize it, but it was exactly what he needed. And in verse 12, Naaman's still ranting, saying, "Are not Abana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" I mean, why wash in dirty water when there's better rivers back home? So he turned and went away in a rage, furious. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, it's a term of great respect for him, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, slay a dragon or kill a giant, and you know, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, Wash and be clean? If you would do the great thing, why wouldn't you do the simple thing? Then he went down. So in between verses 13 and 14, there's a change of heart and mind in Naaman. And he humbled himself, which is probably difficult for him to do. Because when you're a fighting man, humility is like weakness. And weakness invites the enemy to attack you. So he probably spent a lot of time showing himself as a great man so he can win the battles for his king and for his own reputation. But he went down and he dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child. And he was clean, no more leprosy. Only took a few minutes, but it took a big change of mind and heart. And then he could do what the man of God told him to do. And he did exactly what he was told. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him and said, Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. That's a fantastic statement for a foreigner to say. He had conquered places in Israel. That's how he got that little maid, from conquering a section of Israel. So now he says, Now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. You know, I brought this gold and these changes of clothing. Take something. But he said, As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So even after being constrained to take something, he would not do it, indicating God told him not to, no matter how much he urges him. And Naaman said, Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant, to me, 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. He said, Can I have some dirt from Israel, where your God is worshipped, so I can bring it back home and have a place where I can offer sacrifices to God that's on Israel soil? He can see how his heart had changed so much. That's really a great healing, you know. He had the miracle of healing, of the leprosy being cleansed, but now his heart was healed. I get a little choked up sometimes, but you know that. Verse 18, In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master, the king, goeth into the house of Rimmon, who is another god, to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon. When I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. See, I'm not going to recognize Rimmon, but I'm going to have to do this because this is the practice of the king. The king worships this other god, and I'm his right-hand man, and, you know, I'm going to have to bow down there. So can I have a pardon from God for going through the motions of that? And he said unto him, Go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, Behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. So he had a little sneaky plot in his mind. So Gehazi followed after Naaman. And when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him and said, Is all well? Is everything all right? And he said, All is well. Everything's good. My master hath sent me, saying, Behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim 2 young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and 2 changes of raiment. He lied. He lied to Naaman. And he said that his master sent him, and he didn't send him. He just told a lie in order to get some money and a couple of changes of clothing. And Naaman said, Oh, be content, take 2 talents, And he urged him and bound 2 talents of silver and 2 bags with 2 changes of garments and laid them upon 2 of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them of their hand and bestowed them in the house. I mean, he hid the stuff in the house so Elisha wouldn't see it. And he let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" And he said, "Oh, thy servant went no whither." Now he's lying to Elisha. He lied to Naaman. He's lying to Elisha, the man of God now. And he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants, the things that Gehazi was probably thinking I could buy with this money? You know, after my stint with Elisha is done, I'll get a farm. You know, this be my retirement package here." And then he said in verse 27, "The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed forever." And he went out from his presence a leper, as white as snow. So Naaman just got healed of leprosy. Gehazi got the leprosy, and it was already like white as snow. And he went out from his presence there. Now, there's one more record regarding Elisha I'd like to share with you. In chapter 8, verse 1, it says, "Then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, Arise and go, thou and thine household, and sojourn wherever thou canst sojourn." You mean go into a different country and stay there as like a temporary resident. "For the Lord hath called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land 7 years." There's going to be a 7-year famine. He said, "I want you to go somewhere else during those 7 years." And the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God. And she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. And it came to pass at the 7 years end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines. And she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land, because apparently in her absence somebody else took over her property and was living there and was growing crops there. So she went to the king saying, "Hey, that's my land. I need it back." And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God. This is a number of years later. It's at least 7 years, but probably more than 7 years. The king at that moment just happened to be talking with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, "Tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elisha hath done." So Gehazi has a gig entertaining the king with the stories of the adventures of Elisha the prophet. That's what he's doing. Verse 5, "And it came to pass, as he was telling the king how he," or Elisha, "had restored a dead body to life, that, behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, 'My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life.'" What timing. "And when the king asked the woman, she told him, 'Is this true? Did Elisha raise your son from the dead?' 'Yeah. And he told me to go away for 7 years, and I came back, and now I need my land back.' So the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, 'Restore all that was hers, and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land, even until now.'" So, just so cool that that happened in that way, that she obeyed Elisha's words. She left, and when she came back, she had a problem. But, you know, for her to come any other day but that day wouldn't have been the same, because there's Gehazi saying, "That's the woman, and that's the son." What a thrilling thing that God did for this woman and for her boy. So that's all we're going to look at regarding Elisha. There is more, but that's all we're going to look at, because next week I want to start looking at the miracles of Jesus Christ and see what we can learn from the gospel records about workings of miracles and gifts of healings. Okay, so God bless everybody, and thank you again for joining us this evening.